It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
We did it, John. We're live. I think this is probably the first time we're going live on a night and like as a game comes up for the Seahawks. So this is going to be exciting. Definitely tune in if you're listening to the pod on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. Tune in on YouTube. We do this every week. This is going to be a fun week. And if you're listening on the pods, you'll already have missed it. But we're live every week, so check us out on YouTube. It's really fun here. We get some comments, get to talk to you guys. It's a good time. Other than that, we've got Seahawks versus Rams this week. We get to talk about that crazy Seahawks-Colts game that I'm sure you're super excited to talk about. And then we've got some Mariners trade moves to talk about and some just general moves, not even trades. And then just kind of this Seattle sports list that we do every week. John, anything to say before we get started?
A shout out to my Gonzaga Bulldogs winning their first ever battle in Seattle, breaking a, I don't know what it was, 5 or 6 game streak of losses in the city of Seattle. That was just really hard on all of us. So we're going to talk about that game specifically, but it feels so good to get that monkey off our back. Got to leave that one with the pod.
Yes, let everybody know that Gonzaga was actually successful in Seattle this year. They didn't lose to UW as they have for the last, what feels like forever, you know, in Seattle at least. All right, for those of you on the pod, here is some Coyote Picnic. We're going to stay live on YouTube. John, we're going to just lead off with just some banger discussion. Mariners, I think we start with the trade deadline or trade talks because the banger discussion is not really there to be had with their acquisition necessarily. So they've been heavily linked over the last little bit to Ketel Marte and Brendan Donovan. Trade talks are going on between, and it sounds like the Giants are kind of the other team that's in on Ketel Marte right now, or sorry, Brendan Donovan. Marte is, you know, getting pursued by basically everybody looking for a free agent. But give me just kind of, do you have any thoughts as to those two players, who you prefer? We can do a little bit more analysis on them as well while we talk about it. But just give me kind of your 2 cents to start us off here.
Yeah, I think the discussion's much more even than a lot of people would looking at its face. Obviously, Marte is putting up significantly larger numbers than Donovan is, but he's 4 years older. My assumption is that whatever package it would take to get him is heavier than what it would be to get Donovan. And there's, you know, the mixed bag of, yeah, Naylor worked really good coming from Arizona, but we just took a 50-roll home run hitter from Arizona and he turned into a pumpkin. When you go and get a guy from St. Louis, that's a, you know, it gets hot there in the summers for sure, but they experience some cold and some wet there in the city. And I'm less worried about the transition to the Pacific Northwest, you know, just in terms of climate as I would be for Marte. So, yeah, I'd be exceptionally happy with either of those moves.
Yeah, I think when you look at both, you see, I think we'll talk a little bit more about the contracts, but in terms of just looking purely at the players, Ketel Marte is like a top 10 to 5 player in baseball, depending on how you're feeling about him that day. Like, he is a very, 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 very good hitter. Like, Ketel Marte is super good. People love him for that. He's not the best defender, but at that point, you're paying for the bat, right? If you're the Mariners, you are paying for the bat. A little bit about his contract. He is scheduled to get paid through 2031, he's got a player option in 2031. He's getting $19.5 million from this year until 2030. And then he would make $11.5 million in 2031 in terms of payroll. So that's a lot of money for a guy. You said he's 31. Like he's
32.
He's
getting,
he'd be getting up there. He's 32. So yeah, he'd be 37 at the time of that player option, which at that point he's probably taking, right? That's $11.5 million in his pocket. And who knows how good he's playing at that point. Maybe he goes and fishes for a 1 or 2 year deal. But at that point, Ketel Marte is on this team long-term. He's probably DHing at that point. You know, just athletically, he's not going to be a second baseman. He's not going to play in the infield. He might be. Maybe he moves to first base. But Ketel Marte is just like not exactly the player you would expect to have in 6-7 years. So with that comes less flexibility for your roster, right? If you get him, you don't have the flexibility to put Cal at DH at that point later in his career. Right now, you put Cole Young and Colt Emerson basically down a peg, and they don't get to play as much for the next couple of years. It just kind of changes the timeline of your roster. But at the same time, Ketel Marte is super, super good. So I don't have a problem with the move necessarily. We can talk personality here in a second as well. But I think overall, it's not a bad deal. Brendan Donovan, on the other hand, contract-wise, he is he's an ARB 1 right now. His estimated payroll for the Mariners or for whatever team, for the Cardinals right now, is $5.75 million. So a little under six. And he's going to be ARB eligible for the next 2 years. So ARB 2 and ARB 3 over the next 2 years. And then he's a free agent. Signs his first contract, does his thing at 31, which is kind of crazy. It's crazy that Ketel Marte got such a big deal and he's like 32 and good to go. And this guy, you know, started his career late and was a seventh round draft pick, all that good stuff. But I think both players are very viable. Any thoughts about those two contract wise?
Yeah, I mean, with this window that the Mariners are trying to hit, the idea of having a guy in ARB for 2 years and then potentially losing him, that's maybe less scary to me. And this is a team that might need cap flexibility in 2 seasons, but to get 2 seasons of Brendan Donovan right now would be a very valuable thing. Contract for Marte, you know, obviously that's a little bit scary, but again, you know, if we have him for the next 4 years to help us try to bust through this competitive window, I don't really care what he's doing on the roster in 2031. You know, if he's the difference between us making a World Series or not, then he can have however much he wants in 2031, you know, and maybe that's a little short-sighted, but it is how I feel. One thing I would like you to talk to me about a little bit, because I've seen a little bit of Brendan Donovan. I did not watch much at all of Arizona last year. Style of play-wise, it looks like they've both been very consistent in terms of average at the plate, both hitting about 280 every year for the last 3 years. The big difference seems to come in slugging, where Marte is averaging almost 15 more home runs a year than Donovan. Difference of about, you know, 25 a year to about 10 a year between the two of them. Yeah, is it mainly slugging you're looking at? Is there any big defensive swing between these two players, or are they both just offensive tools?
Yeah, I think offensively, Marte, you're right. That power is, you know, he's a 25 to 35 home runs a year guy, and that from your second baseman is just kind of insane when you think about it. Like, that is all of the power uptick that we would expect from a crazy first baseman, and Josh Naylor is already providing a decent amount, but anything that we'd be lacking from Naylor would be covered by Ketel Marte at second base, so that's like a huge plus in the offensive category. Defensively, Donovan provides a lot more versatility, right? He can kind of...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Kind of be a like 3.0 times better version of Dylan Moore. Like he is that good. Dylan Moore was like a great super utility guy, but Brendan Donovan is like, you play him at second base, and what it really to me like could do with Brendan Donovan is you have Cole Young play 3 times a week or whatever it is, get him decent play in terms of like he's able to get on the field, do all his things, and then on those days, you can move Brendan Donovan to like left field or right field, and you can give Randy a day of DH or whatever it is. Like, he just provides so much more flexibility. He can play third if you need him to. He can play first if you need him to. I really like the fit because he can play anywhere, and it gives those young guys the opportunity to step in as needed, as the Mariners feel like they can progress. If Cole Young's having just like a crazy week or month, it gives them the opportunity to say, hey, Cole Young, go play every day. Go play most days, and we'll put Brendan in left field, move Randy to DH, whatever they need to do. But it gives them that flexibility. I really like the idea of going for Brendan Donovan. Ketel Marte, obviously, if you get him, you're probably sending over Cole Young in that package, and maybe even, you know, a Laz Montez, or people have been talking about Gerangelo Sinji, Sanja, maybe, I think is actually how you say it. But you're sending over a lot for Ketel Marte. That's a lot of your top prospects. So I think either way, Brendan Donovan is like our best option. In my opinion, Brendan Donovan is the best option. Ketel Marte is like a very, very good option. I'd be happy with either one. I think either one really, really improves this roster right away and for 2026 and 2027, which is really good when you're looking at the window.
I think that's really well said. I do think we're talking about two great options here. We'd love either one. A lot of Mariners connections to these two guys, and either one would go a long, long way in comforting Mariners fans that are just feeling a little bit shaky, feel a little bit nervous, want to make sure that this, you know, front office is serious about trying to open this window up and compete in a real way this next year. But, you know, either one of these signings would lock that in. I think either one of these guys is a clear upgrade over Jorge Polanco. I think particularly just how consistent both of them have been over the last 3 years. Polanco, you know, he hasn't even been consistent month to month, let alone year to year. And these guys are both just such known quantities. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I think I'm firmly in step with you. I like Brendan Donovan more. He's younger, better defensively, more versatile defensively. His contract situation is not as intimidating. It's not as controlling either, but it's less intimidating. Probably have to give up a lot less considering he's basically a 2-year rental before you'd have to pay him big. And also just the idea, again, you know, Naylor did a lot of great things when he came to Seattle, including hit home runs. But the way that Eugenio's home run hitting completely fell off a cliff when he came here just makes me really nervous about a guy coming from, you know, 85 and sunny every single day hitting dingers, and now he's in the cold, wet Seattle air and just can't do it anymore. That makes me really nervous about a guy like Ketel Marte. Again, that's a big swing for the front office. If that's the guy they go and get, I will say thank you. I'll send a note to DePoto and give him my gratitude. But if we're talking apples to apples here, give me Brendan.
Yeah, I think the other side of it is we've had Ketel Marte in our clubhouse before, and he's been, Ryan Divish reported on this, I think, on a different podcast earlier this week. But he's been, you know, Ketel Marte's a little bit of a diva, and Naylor has firsthand experience. Same with Gino, probably has firsthand experience with him on their team. You know, the Mariners are going to go talk to Naylor and be like, hey, how did you feel about this guy? Would this guy be a plus in our locker room? All that kind of stuff. So it's something that we are definitely going to be concerned about moving forward. So keeping our eye on it, definitely. Let's talk about the Mariners' move that they did make, which was signing what I think is hopefully their tertiary backup catcher when it comes to who this guy is going to be, Andrew Knizner. I don't know. There's two N's in there, and it's really throwing me off. But yeah,
it's either Kisner or Knizner. Knizner. He's not a star.
No, he's not a star. He's 30. He's been a backup catcher basically his entire career. I believe he was a Texas Ranger last year, if I'm not mistaken. He's a like Mitch Garver 0.25. Like, he's really he's like Woof. Mitch Garver we actually ended up appreciating, but I really have not been. I'm not a fan of looking at this guy Savant Page right now. That's a lot of blue. He doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play, but other than that, I'm not the most excited about a Mariners signing this guy. If he is our backup catcher, if he is playing 40 games a year, like if this guy is playing 40 games for the Mariners, I am not excited about that.
Yeah, 100%. I think everyone's hoping that he's coming in for an emergency role. I mean, honestly, at this point, it might just be Garver at backup catcher. And Mr. Andrew as a tertiary, as you said. quick correction, he was with the Giants last year and the Rangers before that. So you were close. But it's hard to keep track of where Andrew's going. Yeah, the fact that he's 30 and his statistics have been dropping over the last 2 years does not make me feel better either. To be honest with you, I don't know why you wouldn't just call up a catcher from your farm system. I'm sure there's one out there, and I'd give almost anybody a shot instead of the regressing 30-year-old. But I guess there's something to be said about a guy who's, you know, been in the business for a while and knows what he's doing.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's probably, I don't know if you remember this player at all. Probably not. This was like pre when we were podcasting and you weren't as in on the Mariners at this point, but Brian O'Keefe is a guy who the Mariners had basically as our quad A catcher, where he was just like, whenever a catcher needed, you know, got injured or something, he would come up for a 10-game stretch and be the backup catcher and play 2 games. And he was just that guy. I assume this is kind of the same thing. He's not a young guy, so it's kind of interesting that they would go acquire him. But we don't really have a lot of catchers in our system right now that are young after we traded away Harry Fort. So this is your tertiary catcher, I would think. I think they're probably going to hopefully make a move. But again, if they don't, this is a spot that we are really not a fan of.
Big fourth down play here by the by the Seahawks. Looks like they held the Rams. Kyren did a good job reaching for the first down yardage, but I'm pretty sure they stopped him just short there.
Oh.
Anyway, we'll see what happens.
I need to pull up Amazon while we're watching this.
I've got my phone on my computer playing Amazon right now. So I think these things through.
The fact that it's on Prime, I need to actually just get it pulled up. But yeah, jumping back to the Mariners, I think that's all there is to be said about Andrew Kisner. I'm still strong. We're going to call him Andrew for now.
Andy. Old Andy K.
Do you have anything else to say before I jump to one more guy that I really want to talk about?
No, please.
Okay, let's jump to one of the Japanese third basemen. We've talked about him before, but I believe it's Okamoto is the younger one. Kazuma Okamoto. Is that the younger one?
Yes. Beats me.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I think so. I can't tell. Either way, I want the Mariners to sign one of these Japanese third basemen. That's my hot take. I think people kind of got off them, but I think the swing from, oh, these guys can't really play third base, to like, these guys are going to be just DHs, that went a little far. Like, these guys are professional baseball players who have played major league or professional baseball for the last 10 to 5 years, depending on which one you're looking at. They've played third base. They know what they're doing. I think they could definitely hold their own. And if they're hitting as good as they have been, or as good as projected, I think they're still solid pieces. And Ben Williamson just hasn't really cut it for me since last year. So I just wanted to throw those names out there. Okamoto and Munetaka Murakami, both of those guys are very good options. And I think, I really think the Mariners are probably pursuing that in the background. They've got these two big moves in Donovan and Marte that they're really looking at. But a sneaky piece is to go sign one of these guys on the, you know, kind of back end of the offseason.
Yep. Well, if anybody's listening, it's Tyler's got the perfect headspace right now. He's thinking ahead, thinking years down the line, not just about this window, but Shohei's next free agency. He's first things first. We need to get some more Japanese players on the roster. Obviously, you know, that's good. That's good for him. That we need to get an NBA team in Seattle to give him, you know, some more teams to bet on. And then the last hurdle and the hardest one is going to be legalizing online sports gambling, because he's not driving all the way out to Muckleshoot to place a sports bet. He's a busy guy. So I just really appreciate Tyler thinking this thing all the way through. So
it's a 5-year process. You know, we got to be ready starting now.
Plan. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Let me tell you.
Let me tell you, we are going to be blowing up from this Seattle Supersonics team.
Yeah, that is correct.
But yeah, I think that is just looking ahead. The Mariners as an organization always want to be in on these Japanese players. So I think that there's definitely conversations being had over there. Other than that, I think we've kind of covered the Mariners. The Seahawks game is starting. Let's talk about the Seahawks if you're ready. Are you feeling that?
I'm ready.
You want to talk Colts first? I feel like we need to talk your Colts. Get it out of the way, because that was both an ugly game, but also exciting. It was just a weird one.
Super weird. Super weird. Very ugly. Very exciting. A victory for the Colts in which they lost, and a shocking defeat for the Seahawks in which they won. But yeah, just a weird, weird game. Seattle scored 6 times and only put up 18 points. That's almost impossible. The only way to do it is 6 consecutive field goals. Colts were leading for most of the game. Seahawks took the lead late. Colts took it back, and then the final drive secured it for the Seahawks. It was a, we'll call it a triumphant performance by Phillip Rivers. He was very brave to show up the way that he did. To say that he played well, I think, would be a bit of an exaggeration. 18 for 27, 120 yards. His leading receiver was backup running back Amir Abdullah. That's not what you want to see. But credit the Hawks defense for holding the Colts down the way they were able to. I think the question comes with this Seattle offense. Now, Colts D played well. Fair's fair. And the offense was able to generate yards. I mean, they had 6 scoring drives. Darnold threw for 271. JSN had his typical 110 yards. But the ground game was pathetic, and they could not get it into the end zone. And it almost cost them against a 44-year-old grandfather stepping off the field for the first time in a while.
Yeah, it was kind of just a brutal watch, man. And all things considered, like, it was just the Seahawks offense, for whatever reason, could not get anything going. They were able to move the ball in those kind of quick scenarios. At the end of the game, you think about the Seahawks having to get back to, you know, within field goal range. That was a big thing for them. And they were able to move the ball quick, and that was through the use of Shaheed. So kind of Shaheed's numbers get a little inflated from that. But I think Sam Darnold is, they've just been so, like, specific about what they're allowing Sam Darnold to do, and teams are kind of figuring out, like, okay, it's either going to be a rushing attack that their offensive line has really been unable to generate in any real way, as Kenneth Walker just goes for a huge play.
Massive.
But it's been a really, really solid passing attack, but our rushing attack's been so bad, so they've just been, like, stacking or, like, unstacking the box, I guess, and just, like, letting the Seahawks offensive line try to push through, and the running game just hasn't exploded, right? We ran for 50 yards on 22 carries. That's just not good. And technically, Sam Darnold and Rashid Shaheed accounted for 5 of those carries. So it was 17 carries for 48 yards in total. Like, that's just not enough when it comes to this offensive attack. And so I think that's the real issue, is teams are adjusting. So we need to really find a way to get that rushing offense going. And it really felt like a problem in that Colts game for sure. Phillip Rivers actually played pretty well, all things considered. Like, I expected him to throw 2 interceptions and be a lot slower than he was.
Yeah, and considering they were playing this Hawks defense, he did play well. He was just throwing ducks all over the place. He's always had kind of a weird looking throw, but it looks a lot weirder than it did 5 years ago. Yeah, nice touchdown drive there. By the Seahawks following that forced turnover on 4th and inches. And they did it on the ground, as if to spite us.
They did
us.
It in 5 plays, 1 huge Kenneth Walker run, and Zach Charbonnet punched it in from 5 yards out. That's crazy. Yeah. We just talked smack about him.
That's the story of Kenneth Walker's fantasy season right there. Charbonnet poaching all his hard work. But I mean, Kenneth Walker had more yards on that run in this game than he did on 9 carries against the Colts. So, I think the question for them is, you know, can they generate a creative and authentic NFL offense? I think they've just been so focused on making their defense the best in the NFL. I'm not sure the coaching staff is really putting the time they need in with this offense. It seemed like to start the year, everyone was just kind of surprised that Darnold was just hucking bombs to JSN and that it was working. And they just said, okay, well, screw it. We're not going to mess with that. We're just going to keep focusing on this defense. And, you know, the Hawks might be a couple years. It's funny, dude. Remember this time last year, this Sam Darnold trade, are we going to make the playoffs? Are we going to be able to compete? It's like, yeah, we're ready to compete in a real way. What that means is paying a little bit more attention to this offense and this offensive system and how to get the best out of them. Because, yeah, for a lot of weeks now, it's just felt like Sam and JSN rolling out there and playing backyard football. Maybe they need a little more institutional support.
I would agree with most of that. I think this offense was predicated around JSN being the talent that he is. I think they came into this offseason knowing that it was like, okay, this is going to be the JSN show. We'll make these other, you know, these other moves, but the rushing attack was the thing that needed to grow. And I think Clint Kubiak as a coach with that zone blocking scheme has just like, it takes a little bit for guys to figure it out. And even against that Colts team, they never really figure it out when it came to the rushing attack. But if they can get it right, you know, you see explosive running plays like we just saw against this Rams team. So I think it's something that they kind of have to be feeling, I think, in a way. Like I think you'll figure it out early on a nightly basis when the Seahawks team is playing. You'll see what's coming from this offense and how they're able to work, because that's a really crazy explosive play that just happened there for this rushing team or rushing attack. And then what's going to happen next is they're going to do a play action pass, and Sam Darnold's going to have a huge play to JSN on this next possession, and that's going to be the system. It's kind of a flowing thing. They just need those big explosive rushing plays that they haven't gotten most of the year, all things considered. So that's hopefully what they're able to do going forward.
Yeah. A little insult to injury. It was actually a reception to Kenneth Walker, that 46-yard play. So even though it was a great play by him, it does not
count that
down.
As a rushing play. Was it a screen or a full reception?
I don't see. I just pulled up the box score. So I missed the front end of the play. I just saw the back end of his run. So even if it was just like, yeah, a little screen pass or something, it does not get counted towards the abysmal rushing statistics of this team. So sorry, Seahawks fans. Something interesting.
We need to adjust that.
Yeah. Something to keep track of as we watch this game. Stafford on that first drive had 2 passing attempts. And they gave the ball to Kyren 7 times. You know,
I mean, it worked last time.
It did work. And Kyren had a good game for them last time. Underrated part of that, we're talking about that with Jonathan Taylor. JT was solid. He averaged about 3.9 per carry for 85 yards. Yeah. You know, the offense was anemic enough. He wasn't able to do anything particularly special. But yeah, the Seattle rushing defense, something to keep eyes on, because the Rams have clearly decided that that's how they want to try to win the game today. We'll see if that script changes down 7, but interesting start.
I think it's something that, you know, looking at this game, like the Seahawks were going to have to make that adjustment, and the Rams just kind of, you're almost required to test to see if they made the adjustment. You know, Kyren on that first drive of the first time they played, whenever that, I think that was 2-3 weeks ago, it feels like, whenever they first played, Kyren just like ran it down their throats for the first one. And I think he had like 60 yards on the first possession. So it was quite the experience. And then that one, obviously, they didn't really get anything going. And I think the other side of it is Devontae Adams playing in this one? I don't believe he is. He's not questionable or doubtful all day.
No, he will not play. He hurt his hamstring fairly badly in their last outing.
Yeah.
I don't expect to see Devontae for the rest of the regular season. We'll see if I'm wrong about that, but I would not expect him to play.
Yeah. I think if we win this game, I would not expect them to play. I think the Rams would, like, if we win it, or if we lose as the Seahawks, like, they'll keep chasing that first place spot to try and get the bye. But if the Rams lose, I think they'll accept it, maybe. If Devontae is too hampered, then they will likely just, yeah, not play him. I would agree with you there.
And they might look at matchups. You know, the wild card in the NFC is going to be so interesting. Like, the winner of this game is going to be the clear front runner for the number one overall seed in the NFC, and the loser is going to be the clear favorite for the 5 seed. So it's a game with a lot of stakes we're watching tonight. I'd love to be up 7-0, at least for the moment. And it'll be very interesting to see how both teams react with a loss. Because a win, you know, you have a full game on the rest of the NFL with 2 fairly easy games left, at least for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And if you lose, you have a full game and a half up on any team in the NFL in the wild card. And it's like, okay, what are we really fighting for here down the stretch? So just very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting stretch to the end of the season here for sure. I do like the Seahawks uniforms, by the way. I think they look a little bit too much like the Ducks uniforms, which is what's throwing me off. Like, I'm looking at it and I'm just like,
look a little ducky, man. I'm not sure I like the green sheen on the helmets, but
yeah,
they're going for the way seaweed looks underwater, but not my favorite part of Seattle, if I'm honest.
Ugh.
All right. Anyways, you want to go value dogs?
I was just about to ask. I think we're right on the same page here. We can react as we go. But let's jump to some value dogs here, and I will give you the first pick. Or actually, do we want to summarize? Do we want a quick summary?
Oh, baby, I was 2-1 last week. I'm summarizing. We both went 2-1 last week. Did we share? Was it the Chargers we both had last week?
Yes, we both had the Chargers, which of course we were right about because we're the greatest at this.
Well, and when two minds this sharp get together, they can't possibly be wrong on the same thing. And then the Colts came through for me. For what it's worth, I called that game directly in terms of it just being competitive and the Seahawks pulling it out, but that's why you take 13.5 points. And then who's the team that covered for you?
The other team that covered for me, I believe, was the Bills. Nice. Plus 1.5. I think at the time it was bouncing back and forth, but the Bills, you just would have taken that.
That was valid. They were also down 21-3, so we're going to give you that comeback. That
yeah, that was big. I honestly should have doubled down. I should have looked for that moment and then said, oh, Bills plus 10? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, but we're not tweeting that for the Seattle Twitter.
Underdogs on the year, only 49% against the spread. Vegas continues to hamper the entire point of this section, which is that underdogs are supposed to cover like 53% of the time. But it is what it is. I'm doing my part at 21-18 on the year. Truly the best value in the underdog market. ESPN does not have shit on me.
Truly. Yeah, I think... Another interesting note, I've been saying this basically every week, but home dogs and away dogs, it's basically 50-50. Like, it doesn't really matter if a team is home or away. You're really just looking at the matchup and how things compare here. So we're both coming in feeling good. 2-1 weeks for both of us last week. John on the season, 21-18, and I am just under 500 at 19-20. So we are looking good as a unit. John, I'll give you the nod. You're looking a little better, and you can have that first pick.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. And I'm going to take a pick that just kind of confuses me. To be honest, all three of my picks kind of just confuse me this week because I think I'd have all these lines tilted in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking the Bears plus 1.5 against the Green Bay Packers. The Bears just had another dominant outing, beating up on the vaunted Cleveland Browns defense and putting up, I think it was 31 points. Caleb had the best throw of the NFL season, in my opinion, and that DJ Moore scrambling touchdown. They continue to just build on what this offense is looking like. Defense still has question marks, but it is what it is. They're going up against a Packers team that they played really, really tough last time and, came down to, basically trying to convert a 2 points is what it essentially came down to. Obviously, the pick in the back of the end zone, but it was right there. And this is a Packers team that just lost a tough game to the Broncos. They just lost their best defender, their best player on their roster in Micah Parsons for the rest of the year. It's in Chicago, in Soldier Field. These fans are going to be loud, desperate for this win. Tell me why the Packers are going to win this game.
Let's take a peek behind the curtain here and just let the audience know what we do to kind of go through these value dogs. I had four lines written down and I write them all down so that we can kind of talk through and maybe not have the same picks for all of our picks, and so I had this one written down as well. I think the Bears being plus 1.5 against the Packers this week, like, yes, the Packers need it to take over the one seed, but it's like, so do the Lions every week. So do the Bears every week. It's like, what is the reasoning when it comes to, like, the Bears keep performing and they've won.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Let me tell you something. I took a line. I made a parlay like week two of the NFL season. The Bears were 0-2, and I made a parlay that the Seahawks would make the playoffs and a bunch of teams would miss the playoffs, like the Browns, the Jets, like the Giants. And I put the Bears in that because I thought the Bears were that bad. And since then, they've gone 9-1. Like, it's just, they've been good since week three. Like, it's like, like they've been so good. So I don't know why they would be unfavored in a game, especially when the other team just lost their best defender. I 100% agree with you there. I think this line is kind of absurd. But I'm going to let you have it. I'm going to let you have it.
You're a kind because man. I'll take it.
With with my first pick, I'm going to go with the Panthers, plus 3 versus the Buccaneers. I just think these teams are more even than people are giving them credit for. I keep liking the Panthers, and it's because Bryce Young keeps performing. Hold on, this is kind of a big play. Matthew Stafford at the 5, gives the ball to Blake Corum.
Enough.
Nice. Nice. Tackle for loss there, that's a good sign. Good spot. The Panthers, plus 3 is just like, it feels like these teams are 1.5 points apart. This feels like it should be a 1.5 point line. I feel like I'm getting a point and a half there with the Panthers. So that's why I would take this one. I think the Bucs, yes, their receiving weapons are all for the most part back, but Mike Evans is, you know, not 100%. Emeka Ogbuka has definitely calmed down. Baker Mayfield is definitely playing injured. And I think the Panthers just have been a team that gets to early leads and then they kind of allow teams to come back, but they're still playing. That's a huge stop, by the way. Oh my gosh, that was crazy on Puka.
Yeah, one more. I bet you they go for it here.
They're definitely going to go for it. Oh, Puka's not getting up. Oh, geez.
Puka does this 10 times a game. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, he'll be all right. But yeah, I think this line is just like people believe in the Bucks. This is like, oh, hey, the Bucks are still good. The Panthers are just as good. They're both vying for that NFL or NFC South number one seed or NFC South crown. And so I think you just take the points there. These are even teams and you get 3 points.
Yeah, the thing you're definitely right about is the Bucks are just kind of a mess right now. And it's been just coming apart at the seams for them. The Panthers just make me nervous. I can, every time I think I've got them figured out, they throw a wrench in my plans. So I'm going to let you have this one all to yourself. But yeah, 3 points is great. Divisional rivalries, these things are always tight. So I think that's very reasonable. With my second pick, I'm going to pick another line I don't really get, and it's the Jaguars +3 against the Denver Broncos. Jaguars are coming off one of the most dominant wins of the season. Their offense looked completely unstoppable. Trevor Lawrence almost carried me single-handedly in my fantasy league playoffs. I think he counted for 6 total touchdowns in that game. Their offense looks so good, and their defense has a great pass rush, and they're, you know, built out at linebacker. Their corners need some help, but it is what it is. The Broncos, I continue, you know, they keep winning games. They certainly keep winning games. But I continue to be less than impressed in the offensive structure. I mean, the defense is awesome, but I think great offense beats great defense, and I think the Jags are going to put up points. I just don't believe Bo Nix can really keep up. So we'll see if they prove me wrong, but I'll continue to bet against these Broncos and lose these bets because, you know, when you're this far above 500, you can afford to lose a couple.
This line scared me a little bit, and the reason for that is because last week, you are right, Trevor Lawrence accounted for 6 touchdowns. That was against the New York Football Jets, and that is not, to me, how Trevor Lawrence is, you know, destined to play the rest of the season. I think he capitalized on a defense that has been hampered with injuries for the entire season. They lost all their good defensive players in what feels like all the trades that happened. That being said, this Jags team is good. They're the best team in the AFC South for a reason, or at least record-wise right now. And I think getting 3 points isn't a bad deal. I think the Broncos are just like, their defense has been so unstoppable. Like, it feels like their defense is worth 7 points a game just because they're either getting like 4th-and-1 stops or they're just getting 6 points through interceptions and things like that. So I think the Broncos defense is real enough that this Jags +3 line is pretty fair. I'm scared to take either one. Like, I'm scared to take the Broncos -3 or the Jags +3. Like, I would personally stay away from the line, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, you're about to say what your second pick is. The more time I look at your second pick, I'm like, man, maybe I should have just gone with that. Maybe we could have just shared all three.
Like, hey, these are the 3-0 picks. Like, take these ones.
Yeah, but we were brave and mixed it up a decent bit. So, no, I get it. Even as I think about it, the Broncos scare me a bit, but you gotta live and learn. Okay, so it looks like Rams got in the end zone, but there's a flag on the play.
There is a flag. We'll see what happens here.
Ferguson looks shaken up. Oh, and that's on the offense.
Oh!
They're backing that up.
What did they call, though? I think he had his hand over his head. What penalty is that?
I believe that's a legal man downfield. Or a legal motion.
Could be one of the two. I like that hit that the Seahawks defender put on on the guy who received it. Did you see that?
He was not happy getting up. Okay,
67 right here.
He got too far downfield.
He just pushed too far.
Yeah, well, I think that's it. Okay, well, tough one for the Rams, but they'll probably kick the field goal now. Field goal team comes
in. He's definitely, he might have had that ball. Either way, field goal time. Let me give my second pick here, and it is going to be the Chargers +2.5 versus the Cowboys. I don't know why the Cowboys are favored in this game. Is it because people think that the Chargers don't have to win this, and like they're not vying for a seed? Like, what? The Chargers just beat the Chiefs. They were +5.5. Why would the Cowboys be getting less points than the Chiefs? I guess Why are the Chargers not favored? Is really my question. Like, they should be -2.5. This line is 5 points for us bettors. It's basically the Dallas line, right? It's every Vegas or every sports book is like, hey, people are going to bet on Dallas. Might as well throw this line right where people want it. So I think the Chargers should win this game. Justin Herbert, even though he's playing through a broken hand, like, Kamani Vidal's been good. Omarion Hampton's been good. They've still got all the receiving weapons. Yes, their line's beat up, but that hasn't seemed to slow them down at all. Like, it feels like just a free 2.5 point line that you're getting.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, in hindsight, our picks should really be Bears, Chargers, and then the third team, which we actually are going to share, spoiler. Those are the three best lines of the week. The Chargers one completely baffles me. The Cowboys had one moment in about week 7 where it's like, oh man, this offense is clearly electric. Is this defense actually kind of good? Do they have kind of a little bit of a pass rush? Maybe this is a serious football team. False. Over the last 5 weeks of the season, their defense has been completely unserious. They're a clown show operation, and they're one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Now, why one of the worst defenses in the NFL are going to screw up Justin Herbert and his offensive weapons, including the newly returned Omarion Hampton, who is a complete monster over the first 4 weeks of the season, it baffles me. Their running game looked great last week against the Chiefs. The passing game looked really good last week against the Chiefs. Justin Herbert was getting it done with his legs. He looks healthy for the first time since his injury. I really don't want anything to do with this Chargers team. And their defense, while not great, is a serious unit. And the Cowboys just aren't. So I agree with you. This is close to free.
I think the one thing that the sports books are capitalizing on too, along with the Cowboys fans, is the Cowboys are kind of destined to score 30 points a game. And the Chargers just haven't really been a high scoring offense yet. We'll see if their defense can contain the Cowboys, but also like you said, the Cowboys defense has been so bad. Like, maybe the Chargers are just down to score 42 this week. We'll see. I just think 2.5 points for this Chargers team against this Cowboys defense is so much. Like, the weapons that this Chargers offense has is just, it's crazy compared to that Dallas defense. Like, I'm so excited to watch this game. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun game.
I think Dallas's offense is great, but there's a reason all their opponents, no matter who they are scoring with them, and it's because their defense is a joke. No, don't you worry about the Chargers offense. They're going to put up plenty of points.
Yep. All right. Give us that final pick.
All right. The pick that we are sharing this week, because it was simply too delicious to pass up, is the New England Patriots +3 against the Baltimore Ravens. I don't get this at all. The Ravens just took advantage of a Joe Burrow undergoing psychotic collapse to beat up on the Bengals, while the Patriots blew a 20-point lead to one of the best teams in the NFL. The Patriots are going to come into this game angry, and this is a very important game for them. If they lose this game, they will be tied with the Bills in their division with a chance of letting all this hard work slip and fall into the wild card instead of being the one seed in the AFC. It's an absolutely massive game for the Pats. They're going to take it incredibly seriously. And yeah, the Ravens have been booty cheeks. They just had one good game where they beat up on a team whose quarterback is literally sending out like SOS texts.
He's like crying like a baby just every day.
Yeah. Joe Burrow is maybe my favorite professional athlete, and I'm worried about that dude. Like, you cannot count that win as like, oh, we're so back, baby. Like, that's not what happened there. This is truly, it's a big game for Baltimore. Obviously, they need it to win their division, but the Patriots are just significantly better than this unit.
Yeah. As JSN probably should have secured that catch. I'm sorry. We're also covering this Seahawks game as it's happening, but JSN probably should have secured that. Guy had his hand wrapped around him. That's just kind of typical cornerback play there. No issues with that one. They really should have converted on that Barner drop, I think, is where they messed up on that play before.
Well, I'll say too, this Rams team moves the ball like no other team in the NFL. They're, credit to Matt Stafford. I think he's absolutely the MVP. I think he deserves it. He had I literally had it up here. He had a 19-yard throw to Kanata Mumpfield. That's M-U-M-P field. Mumpfield. Anybody that can throw a 19-yard pass to Kanata Mumpfield for a reception deserves an MVP in my book. I think when you're playing a team like the Rams that can move the ball like this, if it's 4th-and-1 on your own 45, I know that's technically a bad statistical play, but like, you're going to have to put up points. Did you watch the Detroit game last week? You got to put up points.
That was crazy.
Yeah, so I think the Seahawks have been a little bit passive, but we'll see.
That is the classic from this season, classic case of Mike McDonald being like, hey, our defense is so good, there's no reason that we have to worry about this. We're pinning them inside the 10. Like, we shouldn't have to worry about this at all. So we'll see how the defense goes here on this drive. I'm hoping that they can continue to win here.
Yeah, but give your Pats take.
Yeah, Pats discussion real quick. Pats versus Ravens. Pats plus +3 is just like the epitome of like, again, the betters thinking that the Ravens have to win this game. Obviously, they do. The Ravens have to win this game to stay in playoff contention. But the Steelers play the Bills this week. Like, that's going to be a tough game for the Bills or for the Steelers. If they lose, the Ravens are still fine. If they win against the Steelers next week, they'll be all right. And it's a classic case of like, hey, the Ravens have to win, and we believe in Lamar Jackson. And that's kind of the only reason. And the Pats being plus +3, it's like, this is a must-win game for the Pats. That's the entirety of what you were saying is correct, because the Pats need this to not fall down into that like questionable wild card seed versus 2 seed, or even the number 1 seed if they get there. But to get 3 points for this team that's been so explosive, and yes, the Ravens defense has actually been pretty good kind of the latter half of the season. I will give them credit for that. But all things considered, this Pats offense is scoring 30 points a game. Like, the Ravens have been unable to move the football. This is going to take like a big game from Lamar, who seems like he's been playing injured for the last half of the season. Like, it's just been like that since he came back. He still looks like he's playing injured. So we'll see. I really hate the line there for the Ravens. I love the Pats plus +3. I agree with you. I think this is our three lines should have been Chargers plus +2.5, Bears plus +1.5, and Pats plus +3. I think those are the three locks. I think you and I would both lock those up. So
build that parlay, mortgage your home. Like, we cannot. Please email Tyler if this messes up. You can say whatever you want, because this is not going to mess up. I promise.
Yes. All right. Anything else value dogs wise before we jump into a couple of the sporadic things while we're watching this game?
No, let's bump it.
All right. So first up, UW, University of Washington, beat Boise State in the LA, the Bucket LA Bowl or something like that. I think that's what it was called. Buck Up LA Bowl. And it was a smackdown by UW. They won 38-10, and they had 5 interceptions and cooked, as Puka goes, for just like 60 yards. Jesus Christ.
This is why you go for it on 4th and 1.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you there. Yeah, UW has just like a really good game. Damon Williams throws for 4 touchdowns. Jonah Coleman has one. Denzel Boston has one, and 6 receptions for 126 yards. Like, they let these guys cook and build their case for the NFL here. Like, they were just like, hey, you guys get this last game in, build that NFL talk, and then NFL hype. And then we'll keep moving. Like, Damon's going to be so good next year. He was 15 of 24. Like, that's, they did so good. He was so efficient. 215 yards on 15 passes or 15 completions is insane. Yeah, just a bunch of really, really solid offense. Obviously, the defense was great with 5 interceptions. That's insane. So just a really solid performance by UW there. Did you get a chance to watch this one at all?
Yeah, I did. I was watching it at a bar pre-gaming for the Zag game, though, we're going to talk about here shortly. And yeah, it was epic. Defense looked great. It was great seeing guys. And you know what? Screw all the haters. The bowl games are still elite. I love watching bowl games. I love watching two good teams play. Like Boise State, it didn't look like they brought their best stuff offensively tonight. But yeah, seeing Jonah Coleman play one last time in UW jersey, I'm going to miss that dude a lot. Denzel Boston's going to the league. I'm going to miss that dude a lot. He's such a stud. I love Denzel. And Damon, just hoping this guy stays in Seattle, because I think he's going to be a star. I think he's got a chance at Heisman-like candidacy in the coming years. So hopefully he can build the right system around him. But yeah, what a great punctuation mark on. And you know what? It was kind of an up and down season, and then there was.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Brief moments of like playoff talk, but right now, Huskies 9-4 won their bowl game at the end of the year. That's a big successful season for the UW Huskies.
That's a huge step, especially in the Big Ten, where it's like, this is going to be a conference that is a powerhouse conference. It's them and the SEC. Like, you really think about it, it's a power two, and then there's two other conferences. And that's some exciting stuff going on for UW there. Hopefully they can continue it. Let's jump now quickly. Quick note on the Kraken. Last week they were 11, I believe, 9-6. And since then, or now they are 12-13-6. So they've gone 1-4 since we last talked. The Kraken not having a great stretch here, losing out on their kind of contention that we thought they might have early on. So just wanted to shout out them real quick before you get to talk about Gonzaga. Anything to say about the Kraken here real quick?
No.
All right. Give me that Gonzaga discussion.
Okay. Zags have played two games since we last talked. Just last night, they beat up on a team called Campbell. I'm not sure if they're related to the soup company. I don't know anything about them.
Campbell Soup, quite the discussion to be had on them this year. They've had a lot of newsworthy stories with regards to their CEO and employees.
Yep. Campbell's been a mess, and Campbell basketball is a mess. I have nothing to say about that game other than Braden Huff had like 38 and missed two shots, so the dude's a stud. But the real one everybody wants to talk about is the battle in Seattle. Gonzaga against UCLA, number 25 ranked UCLA at the time. 82-72 win. It was a really good game. We were up by 5 at half. UCLA jumped back in the second half to take a 3-point lead. And there were these minutes, man. I'll tell you, I've been to three straight battle in Seattles and watched them lose to UConn and lose to Alabama. And I was like, we cannot keep this streak going. We have to end it. We've got to win a game in Climate Pledge. Please, for the love of God. And they rallied in a big way, and their defense locked down, and they got out in transition and just ate in transition, and they ended up winning this game comfortably. Super, super, super encouraging. Obviously, our stars, Huff and EK, combined for 46. That's huge. That's what we need from them. And then we got 12 from Mario Saint-Super, who was awesome. Adam Miller hit three threes. That's big. Puka Nacua just dropped a potential touchdown pass, which is big. yeah, it was just a really well-rounded game. The defense was excellent. I wish they would have defended the three a little bit better. But other than that, it was a pretty spotless win, in my opinion.
Yeah, you look at just kind of how this game played out, Gonzaga-UCLA. It was really tight for most of the game. And then at about the 8-minute mark-ish, they had that, you know, sub-8-minute timeout. Gonzaga was like, hey, let's turn it on a little bit. Took a 10-point lead and just really never looked back, which is really good to see. You know, down the stretch, that's basically just them shooting free throws as UCLA keeps fouling them, trying to come back. So the fact that they were making those, kept their distance, it was basically just twos back and forth for the end of this game. Just a really good sign, like a really good quality win, I think, against a UCLA team that's pretty good. You know, Donovan Dent as a scorer is really good. The fact that he only had 12, like this is a guy who averaged over 20 points a game last year. So yeah, really good defensive showing.
And him, just, yeah, a very shout out game to Donovan Dent and Tyler Bildo. Those guys are an awesome two-man game. Yeah, Donovan had 12 points, he had 10 assists. I bet you 7 of them were to Bildo, who was 24 points, was hitting threes on us. So I liked our defense. Our defense against those two was the main reason that this was a competitive game. So, yeah, UCLA's good, man. They'll be back in the top 25 by the end of the year.
Yeah, kind of a really similar, not the exact same, but what happened in the Gonzaga-Alabama game, where it was like one guy really turned it on. This time it was kind of probably the pick-and-roll game between Dent and Bilodeau. But agreed, it's kind of like once Gonzaga solved that problem, they could pull away and kind of took it to the house.
Spot on.
Moving to UW real quick. They only have played one game since we last talked, and that was against Southern Utah. Hold on. Sorry. We've got a 2nd and 5, now 3rd down and probably 2-ish with Kyron running for 3 there.
Yep.
So we'll react to that as this play comes through, since the Rams are in the red zone for sure. Quick UW shout out, 105-69 against Southern Utah. Southern Utah getting beat up by these Washington teams. Not much to say there, just really efficient game. Most points scored were by Hans Steinbach with 14. So just a really, really solid game. 4 of our 5 starters in double digits, and then we had 2 more in double digits on the bench. Here we go, 3rd and 2. It's definitely going to be a Kyron run. Ooh!
Oh, and he dropped it.
Huge drop. Was that Bigby or Higby? Was that Tyler Higby? Or was that Allen was the guy Allen who got hit? Yeah.
Did that David Allen? Dennis Allen? Whatever his name is.
Dennis Allen's an actor, isn't it?
Josh Allen? I don't know who it is. I've got a little bit of a cold, if anybody can hear my sinuses through the microphone. So anything I have said can be exonerated. Yeah, that UW game was sick, man. 9 guys scoring 7 or more points. That's elite stuff. And yeah, beating up on the Thunderbirds. You hate to see it. Looks like they're going 4th and goal again, which I think is the right call. This is a team being aggressive.
Well, it is 4th and 2. They can just get a first down, but yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like they're going for it.
4th and goal.
Really need to stuff the box here. Okay, they just tried to get a little bit jiggy with it. Tried to get a little bit of
those cowards offsides. I would have gone for it there. I disagree with that call.
Okay, they delay a game. Okay, so now they're just kicking the field goal.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't like that call at all. But more power to McVay. I guess he's probably a better coach than me.
Jared Verse has been so good for the Rams, and that defense has been really, really solid, all things considered. So yeah. I think they trust that defense more than I probably would, considering they gave up a lot of points to the Rams last week.
Yeah, hopefully what the heck happened against the Rams, or against Detroit for the Rams defense?
Lions, yeah.
Their defense has looked so good all year, and then they just got eaten alive by Jared Goff. It's always a concern.
Goff is carving it up.
Yeah, Goff always gets fired up for the McVay reunions. You know, he's the jilted lover. He wants to show how hot he's gotten.
Okay, kick the field goal. Good job by the Rams. Good job by the Seahawks defense there, stopping them, preventing the touchdown. That's a huge, huge little piece there. I feel bad. My brother was asking me earlier this week about if he should start Kyron Williams or Ashton Jeanty or Quinshon Judkins. Ooh. And I think he ended up going with Williams. And I was just like, it's probably Judkins because the Bills' running defense hasn't been that good.
Yeah.
But Williams has not performed very much at all this game. So it's making my take look pretty good.
He's got 25 yards. It's early on. If he gets a touchdown, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Okay, next up, yeah, we talked to UW. WSU won their game against Eastern Washington. They're now 4-8. There's one more real thing that we want to talk about on this pod, and that is NBA expansion. This is the last little segment, and it's because Adam Silver had kind of his midseason press conference and talked a little bit about NBA expansion, and obviously this has to do with Seattle and the Sonics coming back and things like that. So that is exciting news for us. What he said was basically, their plan is to solidify what they want to do in 2026. The two things that they might do are expanding the NBA, which is adding two teams, which would likely be Vegas and Seattle. That's not a sure, but it would likely be Vegas and Seattle. Or they would go to Europe and kind of make a European NBA league and focus their money on that and expanding that to create, you know, kind of a worldwide presence. I want you to give me just kind of your thoughts on what you would like to see from the NBA as they move towards one of those options. Because obviously, you know, as a fan, we want to see the Sonics, but what do you think is going to happen, I guess, is the real question.
Yeah, I think the Europe stuff's pretty pie in the sky. If anything, it just seems so outlandish to me. I think it might be more of a negotiating tactic to try to work with these owners, work with whatever buyers are potentially looking to get the new teams, and just try to, you know, put out another option. Oh, maybe we're going to go start a league in Europe. Maybe I'm way off base. There's been a lot of talk about a potential European league, but I don't really see the vision for that. The NBA is ripe for expansion. Depth is so deep right now that, you know, some of the best teams in the league are in Oklahoma City, and, you know, some of these smaller markets, Detroit and OKC, might be the two best teams in basketball right now. That's reason enough for the NBA to panic. Last thing they want is Oklahoma City winning 5 of the next 7 championships. That would be horrible for the league. And guess what? If you do expansion, you get to do an expansion draft, and you get to protect a certain number of players, and then the expansion teams get to pick OKC to the bone like a vulture. That would be good for the league if they're trying to get wins in LA and New York, which, you know, by forcing the Luka trade through, obviously that's what they're going for. So, yeah, I just don't understand why Europe would be a better option than just expansion, other than ownership greed. It's like, guys, this is good for the league ultimately. You'll make more money in the long term. Take a breath.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. One other thing that I want to add is that expansion, yeah, there's a little bit of false start there. Expansion would, in my opinion, the dilution of talent across the teams leads to a better ability for team for the NBA as a whole to market. I don't know how much they're considering that, but it's yeah. like the less good the I guess OKC's, the Indiana's are, and player wise, they've done a pretty good job marketing Shea. They've done what they can, but player wise, it's like you want players like Luka, you know, LeBron when he was at his peak. You want like Anthony Edwards. You want those guys, the singular stars who kind of like are the faces of a team to be the best teams. Because going forward, that's how you build the brand.
Yes.
And the fact that you have teams like OKC with all this depth winning when it doesn't seem like they really necessarily like have the star power. Yeah, yeah, they don't even need him.
Yeah, they do great without him. They won the or they won in Phoenix in the quarterfinals of the Cup without Shea, and they beat Phoenix by 30 without the MVP.
Yeah, yeah, they don't need Shea at all, and it's just like. This is why the talent pool being as big as it is really good. And obviously, if you expand to Europe, you get the talent dispersed a little bit. But I also think players just, you know, signing a free agent to friggin' Madrid or whatever it is, like, that would be impossible. Players don't want to go to Europe. Like, that's just not going to happen.
If they did something, it would be a separate league also owned by the NBA. The most crossover that you'd see would be potentially, like, a Champions Cup where you'd have the champion of the Europe League and the champion of the US League maybe play a game of or something, but no.
You don't think there's going to be relegation?
No, that'd be incredible. The NBPA would not allow, the Players Association would not allow, because yeah, guess what, dude? Going to Madrid for a year sounds pretty cool, but can you imagine your workplace being like, oh, hey, Tyler, we're sending you to Belgium. Your six-year contract just got traded, and you're on the Brussels busybodies now. Like, nobody wants that. So, no, they'd be entirely... And that's another part of it, too. It's like, that's not really expanding into Europe. That's creating a second basketball league in Europe. If anything, that could dilute viewership in the U.S. because people might like the European style of basketball more. People love FIBA. And if there's NBA in Europe, maybe, you know, your girlfriend doesn't mind watching the Spanish team because all the hot guys. So, you know, maybe you're watching more... You know, NBA Europe and less NBA US. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
What it does do is it develops the 3 a.m. wake up call for NBA basketball. You know, those Champions League guys that we're friends with, they're waking up at 4 a.m. to throw on Bundesliga.
Yeah, finally there's something for me to watch when all my stupid soccer friends drag me out of bed at 6 a.m. Hey, can we get this big screen changed over? Madrid basketball's on.
Buffalo Wild Wings hour is going to just change dramatically. It's going to be That's there's going to be a wild change.
The B-Dubs breakfast sandwich is going to hit different. Okay, I'm talking myself into it. Fuck Seattle.
Yeah, give me my pre-work B-Dubs breakfast sandwich. That'll hit.
That'll be
some
good.
Little like mango habanero wings before I start the workday.
Buffalo sauce on my eggs. Let's do it.
Oh, all right. Anyways, the Seahawks game, obviously they just punted. Rams just got the ball. Do you want to stick around at all, react to this next possession, or should we get out of here?
Let's call it. This isn't what we do. Maybe we'll set up a true watch event at some point, but that I feel like that's just going to make the pod weird if it's 3 hours long.
That's very fair. All right, sir. With all that being said, if you enjoyed this episode of Sound Up Seattle, please feel free to give us a follow, drop a like, subscribe, do all that good stuff if you're watching on YouTube. If you found us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening, definitely follow us. Give us a 5-star rating. Do all that good stuff. I hope you enjoyed. You can find Sound Up Seattle on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram, all at Sound Up Seattle, all lowercase, all one word. You can email us questions, comments, concerns about our parlay that we definitely just made for you that's going to win you so much money at soundupseattle@gmail.com. You can find me. I think I said everything right. You can find me, Tyler, at TyCart50, everywhere that's important. And you can find John.
Reading The Count of Monte Cristo, man. That book slaps. Such hateable characters. It's unbelievable. It's just about a cool dude, and there's a guy that wants his girl, and there's a guy that wants his job, and they just give him the shaft, and they get him sent to prison. I am locked in.
Oh, I've never read it, and you're going to have to give that to me next time I'm back in Seattle.
Heck yeah, dude.
All right. With all that being said, I mean, It's got to be a Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. We're mid-Hawks game. Go Hawks. Pull it out.
since I left this